People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. One of the big events here in Cape Town around this time of the year is the Suidoosterfees, which has all sorts of things going on here at the Artscape Complex at the City Hall and elsewhere. And this year it runs from the 25th of April to the 1st of May. And one of the features, one of the productions in the music section, is a production of Franz Lehár's evergreen operetta called The Merry Widow, which is going to be directed by Christine Krause and put on by the AGL Opera. And I wanted to find out about AGL Opera, and Christine Krause is known to us because Christine worked for years at Cape Town Opera, and Christine is in fact here with me in the studio. So welcome, Christine. Again, it was some years we spoke, wasn't it? Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
And I'm right, you have retired, actually. You've officially retired from Cape Town Opera.
I'm not retired.
I mean from the opera.
No, I took a voluntary retrenchment package.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and started freelancing. Although I'm close to retirement age, I can't just retire yet.
No. But very often when you do move, as you've just done, so you've taken this retrenchment package, sometimes you end up being more busy. Is that a story with you?
Yes, I was. Yes and no. You know, out there in the professional world, freelancing is not always easy. Last year I was incredibly busy, and very thankful for all the opportunities. This year I'm also very busy, but not as busy as I would like to be.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
When you were at Cape Town Opera, you had quite a long stay there, didn't you?
Yeah, I was there for, well, you know, I started in the days when it was still KPAB.
Mm.
So all in all, it was just over 40 years.
40 years?
Yes, yes, yes.
Gosh, you can write a book about
Cape
Town Opera.
I can.
Are you likely to?
No, I don't think so.
But and the other thing I must put into context is, as many people will know, you're the daughter of the famous Nelly Dutoy, who she died last year, didn't she?
Yes, she passed away in July last year.
It's one of my great regrets, actually, that I didn't get her onto People of Note before she became ill.
Yeah.
But she was certainly a legend. And was she responsible, really, for getting you into the world of opera?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She, you know, as a young child, I mean, I'm one of, we have four sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I was the oldest. And we grew up in a house that was filled with singing all the time. And my mother taught from home. She sang. And I started going to rehearsals with her at a very young age and was just kind of swept in by the whole theatre magic.
Yes, the drama of opera the magic of opera, as you say.
And, you know, in those days, in my naivete, I would say that I kind of gave her notes. I would sit in the auditorium and say, no, I don't think you should be doing that. I think you should
what
be.
What a cheek she must have thought. But that's your
but
early.
She actually took it.
Oh, right.
And then sometimes it improved. So, so I think, and that led me to come to KPAB. And I started my career as a stage manager for the opera and then worked my way through various categories.
Until you were really at the end, what, a senior director, producer, head
I was
of artistic.
Artistic director for Cape Town Opera, and then I became head of outreach and education, and that's just after that I left.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, isn't it, Christine, that you gave your mother notes when you were so young, because maybe that was the early director in you sort of lurking
absolutely.
There.
I think so.
And did it not – do you didn't want to become a singer?
You know, I took singing lessons many years ago with still the late Frederick Dahlberg.
Mm.
And I auditioned for the chorus, and they said my audition was terrible, so they didn't want to take me.
Shame.
Although I had a voice,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think I would have had the nerve to be, you know, on stage in the public eye. That's not really my persona,
okay.
You know.
But we all have different callings, shall we say,
yeah.
can't we? And, I mean, your love and passion got its sort of satisfaction out of directing for all those years?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what is so amazing is that I worked with so many directors, and I had so many influences from these directors. You know, people like Niels Hansen, Gigi Fiasconaro, and then, of course, my biggest mentor, Angelo Cobato. He learned me my trade, really. Mm-hmm. And I learned my trade by watching and then being encouraged to direct little scenes. I remember David Matheson.
Yes.
The late David Matheson gave me my first opportunity to do a little snippet of The Merry Wives of Windsor. And, you know, and that's how I got into it.
I want to ask you a lot more about your career, but I also want to concentrate quite a lot, Christine, on this production of The Merry Widow. First of all, because we know it's really an evergreen work, isn't it? And you're putting it on here, directing it for just one performance on the 27th of April. And I think we can safely say that of the Viennese operettas, it's really an all-time favorite, isn't it? Have you directed it before?
You know, that goes back in my history again. you know, in the early days of Cape Ap, we did many, many performances of The Merry Widow and directed by Angelo. And last year, I did my own first production at the University of the Free State with the students there and with some professionals.
And that was your first directing of
The Merry
opera.
Widow. And we had Albertus Engelbrecht in the role of Danilo, who is I taught as a student at the Stellenbosch University. So, you know, it's a lot of
interlinking.
Interlinking, yes.
Okay, now, before we go any further, let's whet everybody's appetite with a famous excerpt from The Merry Widow, and you've chosen the Vilja song, which is one of the great hits, isn't it, not only in the opera, but in the opera world.
Oh, absolutely, and it's such a beautifully poignant moment when she sings about this love, you know, so it's a beautiful excerpt.
There once was a huntsman a long time ago, who strayed from the path and got lost in the snow. But then in a clearing a beauty the same. His heart was turned to ice.
Goodness, it is a magical, magical aria, that, mm-hmm. isn't it? The Vilja song from The Merry Widow by Franz Lehár. That recording with René Fleming. And the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Christine Krause, who's directing The Merry Widow for the Oster, St. Oosterfeest, which is going to be performed on the 27th of April. Just as a matter of interest, where is it being put on?
It's being put on in the Opera House.
Here at Artscape?
Yes, yes.
Excellent. So then everyone will know where to come. And it's just one performance.
I sincerely hope so.
It's just one performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so here we are with you directing. But first of all, I see it's being put on by AGL Opera. Mm. Now, what is that?
AGL Opera is an opera company that was started by Johannes van Staden Slabbert and Raimondo van Staden in 2015. And they do projects all over the country. They've just done Symphony of Prayer in Paul. And last year they did Die Fledermaus at the St. Oosterfeest.
Oh, yes. Okay. So yes, that was them as well.
That was them.
Okay.
And so they are UCT alumni. And two very passionate people about bringing opera, and their motto is creating memories. And so they have cast this production, and then the chorus is made up of students from the conservatory in Stellenbosch.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it's quite independent from Cape Town Opera, in
absolutely,
fact. And yeah. What does AGL stand for, by the way? What does AGL stand for?
Above ground level.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. You said they were passionate. Is their idea then to bring choral music, opera, to a wider public, that sort
yes,
of thing?
Yes, absolutely. And they are both singers. Mm-hmm. Raimondo also, I think, is a director, so he directed Die Fledermaus last year. And yeah, I think it's just, you know, opera is in danger, I think, in our country, you know, because the funding is so difficult. So I think people are also just trying to do these groups to create opportunities, because there's also not enough opportunities for all the young singers. And there are thousands of them, yeah, you know.
Who are doing so well.
In Cape Town, and who are moving into the rest of the world. So I think these little companies are platforms also for people to get an opportunity to perform.
Isn't it ironic, Christine, that at the very time there are so many young people and so many people of color from previously disadvantaged backgrounds coming into the world of opera, as happens with some of our orchestras, that people are now really struggling for funding, and these people are then leaving us?
You know, I don't understand it. You know, I was thinking about it the other day as well. It's the problem that the government, they don't want to fund opera, because, and I don't understand why not, because we can see how it has changed people's lives. We can see how sought after our singers are in Europe. Why is it that they are so unwilling to help specifically opera, and I think for that matter ballet and classical music as well?
Well, isn't there, there's that thing about it being elitist, which is so wrong, isn't it? Especially
absolutely
in this country,
yeah,
because the way it's been done here, it's certainly not elitist. It's ridiculous to call it elitist.
No, it is ridiculous, yeah.
It's an aura, I suppose, possibly coming from Europe surrounding opera. But then even in Europe, more and more young people are going to opera. So I don't know. Anyway, this production, let's get back to, let's not discuss the ills of the country.
Yeah.
Let's get back to The Merry Widow. And is it, first of all, let me ask you, is it a traditional production or how are you doing it?
It's modern.
Oh, have you modernized it?
Okay. Yeah. It's set in Cape Town. So the Pontevedrian Embassy is in Cape Town. And the widow has come from overseas to visit the Pontevedrian Embassy.
Okay.
So, but we're not losing the flair of the operetta, you know.
The Viennese charms, shall
we
say.
No, we're not modernizing it so much that that is absolutely the core of operetta is the charm and the, you know, so that we're not losing at all.
Okay, and can you, without going through the cast list, can you tell me who's singing the two lead roles?
So the widow is being sung by Lea Gunter, who is also a UCT alumni, and Danilo is sung by Johannes van Staden Slabbert.
Oh, the chap from AGL.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and then, as you said, the chorus comes from Stellenbosch people who...
A very enthusiastic and eager group of young people, and they're lovely to work with.
And the orchestra?
No, we don't have an orchestra. We have two pianos.
Oh, yes, that's
sort of
reduction.
So the music director is Albie van Schalkwyk, and then there's another pianist, and there will be percussion.
Okay. So that at least adds to the charm of the whole thing as well. My goodness. Okay, well, I think let's have another excerpt. And you've chosen Love Unspoken, Lippenschweigen, which I think we can also safely say is one of the big hits, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and that's it's a recurring theme through the operetta because, I mean, Daniel has challenged the widow and said, I will never say that I love you. And they throughout the opera, this kind of theme of the waltz comes until in the last act they get together and sing Lippenschweigen.
Schweigen, Love Unspoken from The Merry Widow. I have to say, Christine, that waltz theme, the sort of recurring theme, as you call it, has, for me, got to be one of the most beautiful of the Viennese waltz tunes, don't you think? And there are many beautiful Viennese waltzes, but that tune,
theme is very special.
Christine Krause is my guest, and Christine is directing The Merry Widow, Franz Lehár's operetta, for the Soet Oosterfeest here at the Artscape Opera House on the 27th of April. And the build-up to this, and you've only got one performance, which is a bit worrying, isn't it? Just, well, when I say worrying, people have to make sure they get there.
Yeah, and you know, Cape Townians are notoriously late with booking tickets.
Making people all panic.
Yes, absolutely.
But do you think, you know, we were talking just now about elitism and all that stuff. Do you think that a festival like the Worcester, St. Oosterfeest, is the atmosphere different? Do you find that the audiences are more general, or do you get the proper audience, opera audience as well? have to be careful saying proper audience, because then I'm falling into the trap, aren't I?
Yeah, I think you would get a sort of a mix, you know, because, I mean, Mary Widow is so well known that, and it's such a lot of fun. It's such a fun piece that you would have your opera lovers coming, but I'm sure you will have some newcomers coming as well for the first time.
And it's the ideal thing.
And it's the ideal thing because it's light and it's funny, and there's romance. You know, it's got all the ingredients.
Are you singing it in English?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that will help. Yeah, certainly.
So. And it is a shortened version, so it's only 90 minutes long.
Oh, okay.
Without any interval. So yeah.
Okay. When just thinking about, you also mentioned earlier your outreach work, and you were certainly at Cape Town Opera, you were very involved with outreach, and that is very important, isn't it? And it's another reason why one wonders why the government doesn't take notice, because there's so much outreach work going on, isn't there? And do you find you're still doing that out of Cape Town Opera to some extent or not?
No, not. I mean, Cape Town Opera are still doing outreach, but I'm not really involved in it.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the funny thing is that outreach is very, very fundable, because a lot of overseas investors are very interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the years that I did outreach, I just saw how it changed young people's lives as well, and how, you know, some of them had social awkwardness and had problems at school. And, you know, we did a lot of reporting on that specifically. And it was remarked on how some of the children improved even in their schoolwork.
Really?
With the work that we did with them, you know. So it's very important. But the problem is then you've got to keep on doing that and following on with that that it then gets to the next phase, so that's not just a hit and run story, you know.
The next phase being possibly going to study formally and getting into
Correct.
An opera company and all that.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere in an interview with you, the interviewer said how South African opera singers often get the opportunity to sing mature roles, big roles, at an early stage of their careers, which on the one hand I suppose is a good thing, but could be negative, or how do you react to that?
You know, a lot of people, I mean, especially at UCT, these kids sing big roles.
You mean too soon?
I don't know. That's a, you know, okay. That's a tricky question, because they get a lot of experience, but you would find that a lot of opera schools don't do so many overseas, don't do so many operas in the first 3 or 4 years of training. So that's where it's a plus for our kids when they go overseas and they can say, I've done this and this and this and that. But it is very taxing sometimes for them, and not all of them would possibly up to the, you know, be on the standard to perform these roles.
Right. But we have, for example, and this is something I think which is very close to your heart, very famously, Cape Town Opera's production of Porgy and Bess was very much a hit internationally, wasn't it? And apart from traveling, it traveled 2 or 3 times. It didn't just go overseas once. It
was not a one-hit wonder.
This
year is Porgy's 10th year anniversary of the production. And unfortunately, this is the year that there's no Porgy production overseas. So, you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have had the opportunity to do Porgy. You know, I didn't specifically like Porgy very much, because it's also a production that was done quite a lot here in the olden days. And then when we created this new production, me and Michael Mitchell, it really became one of my favorites. And I saw the world. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would go to Argentina or, you know, to Spain. I mean, we toured, for 9 years we toured with Porgy.
And it was hugely successful, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. But the problem is now people are starting to do their own Porgys overseas.
Ah.
So, you know, the E&O has just done their first Porgy, and I know there's one happening at Granger Park, which stars one of our local singers as Porgy.
Okay.
So, you know, that's people are now starting to create their own Porgies overseas.
Oh, dear. Well, at least, Christine, if you want to be positive, you can say you were the trailblazer.
it was magnificent, you know.
Okay, well, now we've got to have an excerpt. And when we were discussing what to play, you said, anything but Summertime, please. Is that because Summertime is so well known and so popular?
Yes, I love Summertime, but, you know, I think when people play something from Porgy, they just immediately go, okay, let's do Summertime.
Okay, but we're not going to do that.
No.
We're going to have that lovely sequence, I Got Plenty of Nuttin'.
Yes.
How about that?
That's great.
Plenty, got a lock on the door. Fred, somebody's gonna rob him while he's out a making more. What for? I got no lock on the door, that's the way to be. They can steal the rug from my floor, that's okay with me, all the things that I prize like the stars in the skies are all free. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, I got my song, got hit the whole day long. There's no use complaining, got my gal, got my lord, got my song. Plenty, got to pray all the day. Seems with plenty, you sure got to worry how to keep the devil away, away. I ain't a friend about hell, till the time arrives. Never worry long as I'm well. Never want to strive to be good, to be bad. What the hell, I'm glad I'm alive. I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, I got my song, got heaven the whole day long. There's no use complaining, got my gal.
An excerpt there from George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, I Got Plenty of Nuttin', and the singer there was Eric Owen. My guest on People of Note is Christine Krause, who has, as you've just heard, a long history with Porgy and Bess, but now it's all about Franz Lehár and The Merry Widow, which will be on the 27th of April here at the Artscape Opera House, as part of the Zuidoosterfeest, which opens on the 25th of April. And it's a huge festival, really, isn't it, Christine, of all sorts of things. I mean, aren't we lucky that they, because there's a lot of pop music, or folk, all sorts of things, and yet isn't it wonderful that they've got an opera slap bang
in the
middle?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was walking into the box office this morning and they post us all over this building for the Zuidoosterfeest. And it's normally always packed, as far as I can remember from the years that I've been here.
It's always, it just seems to, I don't know, it seems to grab the attention of the public, doesn't it? Maybe it's the variety.
Yeah.
Or even the, I don't know, the unpredictability of it. There are all sorts of things that happen. But you know what I want to ask you now, before we get back to The Merry Widow? I wanted to ask you, with your career, I mean, you must have, you know, I want to ask you the best and worst. Well, let's not do the worst. But you did so many productions of a vast repertoire, because I don't suppose you can be very fussy when you're a director about what sort of repertoire you do, or can you? Do you have highlights? Tell us something about your directorial.
I think one of my highlights was when Angelo asked me to do Aida many years ago, and I thought, I don't know if I can do that. And I just remember how supportive he was and how Peter Cazalet still designed the set, and we kind of kept it minimalistic, and how happy Angelo was with what happened. And then Butterfly, it was a new production that we did, Michael Mitchell designed for me, and we had the wonderful South African Amanda Eshalas in the first season, and she was magnificent. And then we had in the second return season Tatiana Monogorova, and she was also a magnificent actress. And you know, just there's so much passion and emotion in Butterfly that I'm a passionate person, so I could identify with those.
But I bet you your mother emotions had something to do with that as well.
Oh,
Lily,
yes,
Dutoit famously was a famous and much loved Butterfly, wasn't she?
Oh yeah, she sang it many, many times, and then she also went to the Madama Butterfly competition in Japan, where she was placed 7th, I think, in the world as
Is it a particularly tricky role, that role?
Yes, it's a very taxing role. Mm-hmm. Because
more so, say, than Mimi in Bohème.
I wouldn't
or
say.
Can you not
I think
them?
Mimi. Yeah, I think it's different because, I mean, Butterfly's on the stage most of the time. You know, she. So it's takes a lot of stamina to get through the role if you are involved in your character.
And the production that you've done, the productions that you've done, have they been mostly traditional? I mean, how do you react to these very modern productions? I know you've just said that the Merry Widow is set in Cape Town, but are you pro the sort of slightly avant-garde productions?
You know, it all depends on how it's done. I've seen some avant-garde productions or, you know, the kind of German Regie theater that are very, very engaging. I just hate it when it starts deconstructing opera. Then I don't like it, and then I don't agree with it, you know, because sometimes people think they have to deconstruct opera because it's
trendy thing to do.
It's the trendy thing, and that I don't agree with.
Okay. You know. It's interesting to talk about German Regie, and I'm trying to think what that is. What is that?
Regie theater, you know, where it becomes more about the director than the
the
piece itself.
Which it's happens
like,
quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So if to answer, you've answered my question that I asked a while ago, perhaps your two favorites were Madame Butterfly and Porgy and Bess, yes.
Butterfly, Porgy, and then also, I mean, we had a great season of Der Rosenkavalier. That's also one of my favorite pieces, also because my mother kind of closed her career with singing the Marschallin.
Oh, really? Did she?
Yes, yeah. When the first time when it was done in Cape Town with a production by Professor Murray Dickey, who's then the head of Cape Ape Opera. And then I did the revival, and then later in Cape Town Opera, I did my own production of Der Rosenkavalier.
That must have been quite a challenge, because that's a big piece, isn't it?
Yes,
from,
it is a big
from many,
challenge.
Many
yeah, yeah,
aspects. Yeah. From the orchestra as well.
Oh, yeah. Definitely from the orchestra's point of view and the singers, you know. So we had Andrea Katzel came and sang the Marschallin. Violina Anguelov sang Octavian. And Kimi Skota, I don't know if you
remember
her.
I do.
She was Sophie. And they were a mean team.
A mean team is what you need for that last
yes.
trio.
Yes, absolutely.
And are there operas that you didn't direct that you wished you had directed?
Oh,
there
yeah.
There must be many, I suppose.
Absolutely. One of my favorites is Yenufa, Janacek.
Oh, that's interesting. It's off also the beaten path, may I say.
Yeah, but I think it's also the connection with my mother. You know, she sang it. They did it at PACT many years ago. Yenufa, Turn of the Screw. I'd love to do a Turn of the Screw.
Okay.
I was only a stage manager when we did the production. Yeah.
Those are the
two pieces.
Well, the Turn of the Screw would be interesting.
Yes, it's a magnificent
it's
piece.
It's sort of a psychological
yes,
drama,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember seeing at the State Theatre years ago, Benjamin Britten at his most potent, really, in that opera.
Oh, I love the piece. We did it many years ago, and I was in the corner, and we took it to the Grahamstown Festival with Aviva Pelham.
Oh, right,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So you've certainly had a number of highlights, and we won't talk about lowlights, because I suppose in opera, are you a ruthless director? Are you strict and do people end up in tears, or do you work very well with people?
No, I don't normally do. I don't think I've ever made anybody cry. I think I'm quite patient, but I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I feel very responsible for the people that are on the stage, you know, because they follow you and they trust you.
Yes, absolutely.
And you need to make them look good on the stage.
Because in a sense, their lives or their careers are in your hands.
Yeah, not moment. Entirely, but that performance. Yeah. And although professionals bring a lot with them, then you've got to hone it and make sure that you get the best that is possible.
Okay. Well, we're going to take another music break now, and we're going to listen to Madame Butterfly. How about that? And just tell us the sequence we're going to hear. This is from the last act, isn't it, where it's from where the cannon goes off?
Yes. So we all know the story of Butterfly. She's been waiting for
Pinkerton
to come back, and then all of a sudden the cannon goes off in the harbour. She's just consoling her child and saying, you must wait, your father will come. And then the cannon goes off, and there's this moment where she takes in her breath and she says, il cannone del porto, it's the cannon in the harbour. And then she takes a telescope or whatever, and she looks and she sees the name of the vessel, which is the Abraham Lincoln. And then she bursts out into this fantastic climax that Puccini has written. And where she says to Suzuki, you see, he's coming. And then the magnificent climax before the flower duet, where she and Suzuki arranges flowers to welcome Pinkerton back home.
Mm. Oh, it's goose fleshed up.
I know, I'm getting goose fleshed. I'm speaking to you now.
Okay, let's listen to part of the sequence then.
Thank you.
Well, that's an excerpt from the last act of Madame Butterfly there with Mirella Freni. And we were saying, Christine, in that opera and La Bohème, Puccini really does get under your skin, more than just tugging at your heartstrings. It's something more, isn't it? And that's such a tragic story. And you really feel the tragedy in his stories, don't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, with... I mean, Butterfly, the sadness is the child that is there, of course, as well, you know. And once you've become a mother and you have children, then for me it was, I mean, I nearly had a breakdown one day in the rehearsal room, you know, because of the fact that...
of what was
so
happening.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's not crazy at all, really, but it proves, doesn't it, how close to our hearts Puccini can
be.
Yeah, Christine Krause is my guest on People of Note, and we're talking actually about something a lot lighter, The Merry Widow by Franz Lehár, part of the Sir Worcester Fierce, which is being performed at the Artscape Opera House on the 27th of April, and which Christine is directing. And one of the things, you know, we were talking about audiences, Christine, and whether they come or not, but in the 21st century, we find that people have limited attention spans, glued to gadgets, on Twitter, on Facebook, on all sorts of things. And this does, in a sense, affect audiences, doesn't it? Filling theatres, don't you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a bit of a sickness that people have, that they are so, as you say, they're so glued to all this social media that we have, that I mean, you walk in the streets, you see people, you know, people sit in restaurants and have a dinner, and they're all on their cell phones.
Doesn't it amaze you as well? We must have a little whinge now when you are sitting in a restaurant and you happen to see a couple, husband and wife,
yes,
or boyfriend,
yes,
and they're not talking to each other, and both of them are on.
I
watched, fascinated, at a breakfast in Newlands recently, a couple sitting there, and I don't think they spoke. They were on their phone the whole time. And I mean, an opera is meant to be an escape, isn't it? So why put your cell phone on when you're in the opera?
Yeah, no. I mean, that's crazy. And, you know, I think that's why a lot of people kind of also gear towards kind of having high impact so that you can keep the attention.
That's true. And that's why maybe some directors do weird things. Have you ever done a production have you ever directed something that you regretted and thought, no, I wish I hadn't done that, it's far too modern or far too avant-garde or not?
No, not really. I'm not really an avant-garde director, you know. I've done some productions where I've modernized. I did a very successful Barber that we put stage here for Cape Town Opera, which was set in kind of Cuba, you know. So
the Barber of Seville.
Yes.
In Cuba.
He was escaping because he had debts. I'm not really... I'm a bit more of a traditionalist, but I'm not opposed to stylization or things like that.
Yeah. As you said, as long as it's not deconstructed at the expense of the music and the opera itself. So just as we approach the end of the program, before we play our last piece, Christine, are you we've been positive mostly, and we are positive, aren't we? As long as the government supports us, we've got a future, and there are enough singers and young people interested in opera.
Oh, you know what? You can go to the College of Music and you can hear the voices there.
Mm.
And you know, it's not going to stop, I think. But the audience has to support it as well. Because if the audiences don't support, there's going to be a problem. And then, obviously, you know... I just once said, I think the only way that you can get to the government is to go to the president.
Okay. That's
and
true.
Knock on his door, you know, because somebody's got to notice what's going on. And we cannot die, let opera die in our country.
Yeah.
Because there's too much talent.
There's too much talent, absolutely. And nice way to end, Christine. But before we end, we're going to have another excerpt from The Merry Widow. And you've chosen the septet, which I don't think I know.
The Pontevedrian men and Danilo and Brioche and Cascada. It's the men that, you know, Merry Widow's got quite a lot of quirky plots in it. And one of them is that people are flirting with each other. And so the men it all get together and they complain about women, and it's normally a big dance number and a fun number in the opera. So, you know, the English, what to say, what to think, what to do, what a red letter day if we knew, you know. So it's all about complaining about different kinds of women, and it's really a fun piece.
Okay. Well, let's end in a fun piece, because it's been interesting chatting to you, Christine, about your career at Cape Town Opera, which was so long, as you say, and the opera world in which you've lived, and having been inspired by your mother, Nellie Du Toit. And now here you are with The Merry Widow, Frans Leha. So go along and see it, 27th of April, as part of the Soet Oosterfeest here at the Artscape Opera. And we end now with that septet from The Merry Widow, Viber, Viber. Christine, thank you very much, and all strength to your arm.
Thank you, Rodney. It was lovely talking to you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Offbeat Broadway is back, this time with an all-new show, Offbeat Broadway 5, Behaving Badly. starring Anton Lating, Lindy Abramovitz and Paul de Toy, directed by Alan Committee. Don't miss this Laugh a Second show with all the musicals you could never afford to see all in one night. A little naughty, a lot of clever, and a ton of crazy. That's Offbeat Broadway 5 from the 24th of April to the 11th of May. Only at Theatre on the Bay. Book now. FMR.